gentlemen, welcome back to Pop Culture Ninja. I'm Nathan, here with Nathan. Nathan, how you doing?
Doing terrific.
We are running into our shorter review session.
Yeah, back with another weekly review.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit of time.
Really excited about this one because had an opportunity to try out PlayStation VR, and it blew my mind away. I was totally impressed with it. I'm going to get to that in just a second. But first, just want to remind people, we have our Honey Go Wine and Spirit Beer Fest competition. So you're going to have an opportunity to win one or two tickets, depending on if you also listen to us on these Go to 11. So remember, go ahead and post what we post via Facebook or Twitter for the Beer Fest. Just get that out there and promote it to people. And we will go ahead and put you in for the drawing. Also, our general prize contest is up in full swing again, just to let people know that if you write us an iTunes review, it doesn't even have to be a good review, but it does have to be written. The written reviews are actually what helps us get further up on the list where people can find us and get a hold of us more easily. So please leave us a review. Leave us a review. We're going to put your name into the mix of people who are going to win. What did we say we were doing, Nathan? Like three prizes?
Three or four. It depends on how many, really, that we get. I think what we'll do is the ratio of how many. The more we get, the more prizes we will give away.
Perfect.
Certainly, if we've got several people, then we will make sure we give a few more prizes. The ratio will depend on how many people actually leave a review. So please do leave a review. And also something to throw out there. Nathan and I were kind of just coming back out of the summer now. I'm about to head on vacation, but we're going to get back in the full swing of things. We'll be sitting down and trying to plan some really cool stuff to do with the show and just see it grow. One of the things we had started, it's been kind of up in the air, but is the book reading.
Yep.
So we've done Miss Peregrine's House for Peculiar or Home for Peculiar Children.
Yep.
I just finished reading it last night. Great book. If you haven't gotten it yet, you can still go out and get it and read it. And we'll finally be putting up something like a discussion topic so that we can talk about the book. It'll be on Facebook. So my goal is to get it up on Goodreads as well. I was hesitant to do so before I'd finished reading the book. I'm at a point now. We will also have our first podcast. The next ones could be myself and my sister Rachel discussing Miss Peregrine. It'll be the first probably of two podcasts we do. So any responses, whether that's emailing to us or leaving on Facebook or Goodreads, any thoughts that you have, any part of the conversation, we will be sharing some of that when we talk. So the more of that we have when we actually sit down and record, the better. So we'll be getting that up very soon. And also, if you guys have any thoughts or suggestions on what you'd like to see us cover, whether that's an item, a thing, a book, a movie, or even just maybe a general topic, please send us thoughts. Because as we do plan, we're always looking for ideas of what listeners actually want to hear. So please let us know, and we'd be happy to consider it. And again, I think feedback is definitely what makes podcasting in general better.
Yep.
So please send us some feedback.
Yeah, awesome. So, our reviews. Nathan, let's go ahead and let's start off with the one that we're both going to do together, and then I'll go ahead and do the two that I want to do, and then I'll shoot it over to you for yours.
Sure.
So the one that we want to do together is the DC TV shows that are out. Really looking forward to... I just finished up Flash Season 2.
And I've been waiting for you to do this,
yes,
by the way,
yes,
for quite some time. We kind of talked about it back when we did our TV episode and a little bit regarding The Flash. But yeah, I've been kind of... We'll just throw out there, too. We're not going to go into huge spoiler territory, but I will say that if for some reason you're someone who hasn't caught up with Season 2 yet and wants to do so, probably it'll be out very soon.
Yeah.
You may just want to skip this portion.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's not going to be super in-depth.
Yeah, it's not. Again, if you're someone who's super hypersensitive about spoilers, I have a friend who refuses to watch movie trailers anymore because he is so sensitive to spoilers.
That's not wrong. Most movie trailers these days give away the entire plot. So,
So Flash Season 2 wound up. Nathan, go ahead. What were your thoughts on Season 2?
I think I mentioned before, the thing I like about The Flash in comparison to most of the other superhero shows is The Flash as a character is a little more interesting. I think he's a little more upbeat. He's a little more just a goofy kid mm-hmm. than some of the other characters. He's not quite as brooding. He also has a propensity to be very smart and sometimes, and then incredibly emotionally stupid.
Yeah.
And other times, and the TV show and the creators allow him to be this way. It's not quite. It's not even like, and forgive me here, but it's not even quite like a Marvel movie where you realize later the character's making a lot of stupid choices because the plot requires them to make sure. Stupid choices. Like, we don't exactly know what Captain America's thinking. We think we have a handle on it. And some of that is because of the plot. It's not exactly character-driven. I feel like when Barry Allen does stupid things on The Flash, it's partially plot-driven. Partially, it's trying to stay true to the comic books where he did similarly remarkably stupid things. But I do believe it is also sort of character-based. The show is moved forward not just by Barry doing stupid things, but the way it affects those around him and the way it affects him and the way it changes his thought process.
Yes.
I think what's interesting about season two, there's, in a lot of ways, season two repeats itself in basic plot structure from season one.
Yes.
Which you have, again, you've got elements of the heroes being befriended by a villain who turns out to not have their best interests at heart while at the same time being one of their comrades for most of the season. Yes. That was probably the big flip and switch for season one, even though we knew kind of shortly after the first episode or two that the Harrison Wells character right. was not on the level.
Correct.
Season two brought in Earth 2, which was really increased the enjoyment of the show for me. It allowed them to delve into the comic book world a lot. You had Zoom.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool that Zoom was voiced by actor Tony Todd, who's mostly known for a horror movie called Candyman and a few other things. He has a deep, resonant voice. He added a lot. And, of course, they start to work with the concept of who Jay Garrick is. Yes. Jay Garrick, the Golden Age Flash. And that was an up-and-down thing all season long.
Like, yes.
How I reacted to that was different. There was a little bit of intelligence in how we introduce Jay Garrick, but then we sort of, Jay Garrick and Zoom are related in that sense. And yet, they bringing it full circle, we still, for anyone who loved that character when he was on the comic page, and then to have him sort of be thrown away as just an excuse to have a villain, which is kind of, you know, I think that was people's complaints with Iron Man 3, when they take the Mandarin and completely squander him. This show does that, but then it has its cake and eats it too by actually revealing that who the real Jay Garrick is, and presenting Jay Garrick in a form that not only is it likely we'll see him again, we actually want to see him again now that we know who he is and what his relationship to the Flash is, and it makes Jay Garrick cooler than he was at the beginning of the season, while still ultimately allowing them to use him sort of for the villain. I thought a lot of the standalone stuff was stronger this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure if I'm sold on the emotionally stupid Barry stuff that happens in season two, because I understand why it has happened. I understand what comic storyline it is aping. I understand that it's doing something larger to configure the DC universe to match up. The Flashpoint storyline, I'll leave it at that. If you're familiar with what it is, then you know what I'm talking about, and you may have already watched The Flash. The Flashpoint storyline in the comic books was used to merge the Vertigo characters like Swamp Thing and Hellblazer that they wanted back under their shingle, so to speak. And they are with a similar problem here, where Supergirl was previously on CBS, is now on the CW, but an earlier episode of The Flash did establish that they live in different live in parallel realities. They don't. Supergirl's not Earth 2. She may be Earth 4 or 5. Or 63. We don't know which one, but they weren't together. They weren't merged. However, now, bring her to CW, they are going to fold her into what they're calling the Arrowverse, because Arrow was the first one out of the gate.
Yep.
And there's really, historically, comic books, because there's only one character has ability to do something like that, who can bend the time and space aspect of that with the Speed Force, which is the Flash. So I'm interested in seeing where they're going with Wally West, and I think we know where they're going, and with Wells' daughter.
Yep.
And so I think that it's going to be a really good third season. But I think what we have to see now is Barry getting smarter.
Yeah.
Barry growing up. And season two seemed like it was supposed to be about that a little bit, but giving him such a large emotional setback has really made me wonder. They must have something planned for season three.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel haphazard, really. It was a storyline that was dealt with in the comics. It does make The Flash one of the most just kind of devil-may-care characters in terms of how his actions affect the larger world.
Right.
But the show has also established Barry Allen as a person who does care about what happens.
Right.
So for it to go this way, I don't think this is like a Batman versus Superman thing where they've missed the whole tone of the character.
Sure.
I think they're setting us up for something really good.
Yeah. And I agree. I was talking with our mutual friend Greg Dutcher from These Go to 11 because he was excited for me to finish this up too. And the one thing that I said to him was I thought their strongest episode so far, and I'm going to say is he ends up encountering or being trapped in the Speed Force.
The Kevin Smith episode.
Yep.
And though you can't really tell.
Right. And I think that was the strongest episode so far. I think it was brought in too early. I would have liked to have seen that come maybe a little later in season 4 or 5 down the road. I would have liked to have seen those events of what happened to him occur slightly differently. And you and I can talk offline about that a little bit because you know you really got to get into spoilers in order to divulge some of the things that
happened. It opens an interesting idea that the Speed Force, I mean, I don't think it's too much to say that there's an element of the Speed Force being a kind of living thing.
Right.
And as we get into that, it's certainly going to set up a lot of possibility for what happens next season. If the Speed Force is a living thing that makes decisions, that has a sentience, and has an awareness, then it really opens the door for a lot of different things to happen.
Yeah.
That was very true of how the season actually ended as well.
Right.
The final solution to Zoom and things like that. My issue with that one episode, I agree it was very, very good, is when you look at the overall thrust of what was happening in that episode, what was supposed to have been accomplished in that episode, as much in Barry's mind as anywhere else, it really felt like it was closing out a certain chapter that is just busted wide open.
And that's why I would have rather have seen that in season 4 or 5, with the resolutions that he seemed to have gotten, with the closure he seemed to have gotten with a lot of things. I would have liked to have seen that particular thing happen later as opposed to right here. I felt like they brought it in too early.
And I think that may be where the writers have an opportunity to address what we, particularly I think Western, more so than other cultures' approaches to pop culture, is that we really love to have resolution and we love to have cyclical movement of growth. You know, we don't ever want to see what often happens in real life, which is that a person is dealt a really huge life lesson and they learn absolutely nothing from it, and then kind of repeat the same thing over again. And I feel like The Flash is potentially wading into this water where we see a character make a decision that, as a human being, given the events that lead up to what happens, I can totally understand it, but I can't get behind it. It doesn't make storytelling sense. It doesn't seem to make storytelling sense. I think that is a huge opportunity. This is something that Joss Whedon often dealt with on many of his shows. I mean, Firefly maybe wasn't quite around long enough to do that, but there was some of that where it happened often on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where it would seem that they're the hero, they need to be making this decision, but instead they're making this decision. And really, it becomes a setback to the overall plot, but it is integral to who the character is. So,
yeah, I just, the only problem that I see potentially is that you get to a point where the hero makes too many bad decisions, and then you can't get behind the hero anymore.
Yeah, I think that they earned themselves some latitude based off of what they did to him. What occurred directly beforehand. But it is really going to depend on how they shape the story up.
Yeah.
We can't see another season where Barry gets optimistic and then flames out and does something incredibly potentially destructive and selfish, because we're going on twice now.
Right.
So I think the nature of this particular event may open up opportunities for him to not just fix what's happened, but to maybe even adjust decisions he made in season one.
Sure.
So I'm open to see what happens with it. There are many times when I have given a show the benefit of the doubt, and it's slapped me in the face. But I think that season two was overall still very strong.
I agree.
Liked Earth 2.
Yeah.
I don't know that I liked it as much as season one, just because there was a certain freshness to season one.
Sure.
But I am on board with that. I really enjoyed it. I think it wasn't the first of the shows, but I think it is the heart and crux of the CW shows that exist now. So if we're talking about the others, Arrow, I am really disappointed with Arrow. I mean, we've talked about how the events of Flash may very well filter out and affect and readjust some of these universes.
Yes.
I kind of hope it almost, I hope it undoes whole chunks of Arrow.
Sure.
And maybe takes a few cast members more with it when it goes.
Yeah.
Arrow, this season was very sloppy.
Yeah.
I think that, I don't know for certain, I kind of feel like, I'm not sure if some of, if everyone working on it is starting to get a little bit tired with it, but it's starting to creak a little.
Yeah.
Legends of Tomorrow is a fine show. I just don't know if it's as connected to the other shows currently.
Sure.
It seems to be a good opportunity for DC to try out some of their characters in little bits and pieces here and there. I hear Constantine may come back.
Yep.
The same Constantine that was on, was it NBC or Fox or wherever he was? Well, CW is where he's now. But he had his show for a while. And Jonah Hex has made an appearance.
Yeah.
I'm still personally waiting for Swamp Thing
to
show up. I don't know if that's something that can happen, but I would love to see Swamp Thing. I'm sure they're going to bring in several different characters. They've wrapped up their first season. I think they have potential to get better.
Well, and I think from things that I've read, they know and see where their flaws were in this season, and they're willing to address them. And make it better.
Yeah, and I don't think it was bad. I just think that it was, if it had been the only CW show we had, people would be a lot more positive about it. It's just, it's trying to kind of be TV Avengers.
Sure.
And it is also tacked on to two kind of grounded universes in the Flash and Arrow that have been running for a little bit of time now. Supergirl, I really enjoyed the first season of Supergirl. Now we're going to bring Supergirl in. Now here's the more important wrinkle that I feel like people are just now starting to digest. Recently, two things were announced. One was that Supergirl is coming to the CW universe.
Yep.
So the Flashpoint storyline I talked about is probably how we will fold her in.
Yep.
The other thing is did you see any of Supergirl?
I saw the first two episodes.
So you know enough that in the universe of Supergirl, Superman exists.
Yes.
However, Superman is never glimpsed. He's sort of there. She talks to him for a long time. All we see is his text messages or his instant messages going back and forth with her. But now we have an actor cast as Superman for Supergirl. So this means that Superman now has found his way back into the CW universe.
And it's not Tom Welling, and I'm pissed.
Well,
had to throw that out there.
It's kind of like how people are upset that Grant Gustin is not going to be the Flash in the movies. And, I mean, to be honest, I'm kind of glad he's nowhere near that train wreck. But I'm okay with that. I think bringing Tom Welling back at this point probably wouldn't be forward momentum. I think the big problem with that is that bringing Tom Welling in suggests a relationship to the Smallville universe. And the only problem with that Smallville universe is that Smallville already did Green Arrow, Martian Manhunter, and Aquaman.
Right.
And most of those characters already. Flash. And they were all different actors. So you do create this kind of weird sense where Smallville does sort of exist.
But it was a different universe, remember?
It was. So you could. I mean, it's just like the way they've suggested, well, John Wesley's ship as the Flash.
Right.
Okay, but John Wesley, you know.
Right.
That was a separate universe. And I get that. But, I mean, I think, too, I don't know if Tom Welling is doing anything at all right now. But, I mean, Smallville kind of was its thing. It did its thing. This thing for a long time.
Yeah.
And then it wrapped its story up. And there was more room for more story. But I'm okay. See, with it being a different Superman.
Here's my thing. I don't want to see this become another Superman story. I want Superman popping in and out occasionally.
Which I think this is what this will be. I just think that now we have an actor. Not having an actor there means that there is no opportunity for him to cross over and interact with Arrow. And the cheesy, cutesy, we're never going to see Superman in Smallville was getting very old. I mean, there was an episode near the end of the season where we saw his boots for half the episode. It's his feet. And it's like,
right.
I think the casting of Superman is not to allow Superman to come in and get his own show again.
Right.
I think it's just to have a more concrete Superman because it was getting a little silly.
Yeah. All right. So there you have it. DC coming up in the fall. Looking forward to seeing what they bring. So right now, I mean, I'm just going to take a few minutes. Two game reviews here. The first is, and I made no bones about this when we did our E3 episode. I'm a PS4 guy. That's what I've got. That's what I play right now. For those of you who have PlayStation 4 and you have PlayStation Plus, you are able to download Dungeons & Dragons Neverwinter. Huge online RPG game. Fantastic. I've been enjoying in these past, 7 months now, getting into the Dungeons & Dragons universe. I play once a month with a group of guys, all older than 30. Just putting that out there. So, you know, it's a group of guys get together and we spend 12 hours on one Saturday just playing through Dungeons & Dragons. So I have really been enjoying that in this game. Doesn't disappoint. Takes place in Neverwinter. And you're going through, you know, just working through the storyline. You can join up with people if you want. Build your character. They have all the different characters that you can build. Dwarf, halfling. You can do a human, an elf. They have some demons and dragons and half-dragons. And you can build your character however you want. It's got great customization on body type, facial features, to really make the character you, if that's what you want. Playability and replayability is great. I mean, I've been hooked for the past probably the past week. I've been hooked on it and have been playing it as much as I can. Haven't gotten bored with it yet. So really been enjoying it. Huge level buildups in it. I mean, I think you can go all the way up to 70, 80, 90, something like that, in leveling up. So really, you know, a lot of different missions.
Important question, are there owlbears?
I haven't seen any yet, so...
Okay, just checking. That's a way back to, like, the old Monster Manuals.
Version 1.
Yeah, it's version 1. That's about the only version I remember.
I think this takes place, this comes out, you're playing, like, a version 5.
Okay.
So version 5, you have some skill, some ability that is innate within you, where if I, like... I've come in playing 3.5 and you're at zero. You've got nothing. I mean, you know, a wolf can come out and gnaw your face off. Where this, you know, you have some measure of ability to you. So you can do some things starting off in the game. But yeah, it's fun. I mean, the controls, you know, like I said, I've been playing about a week. Lots of stuff to look through and get involved with working the controls and then interacting with other people online. But I'm slowly picking that stuff up. So, you know, now at this point, I have enough knowledge that I can, if, you know, enough people are around me, I can send a message out, hey, does anybody want to join me in this dungeon siege? Does anyone want to, you know, join me in this raid? Does anyone, you know, so I have enough knowledge to be able to communicate and invite people, host a party going into something, and you know, they try to make it simple, simple enough that you'll be able to pick it up relatively quickly. So been enjoying it. If you have PS4 and you have PlayStation Plus, go ahead and download it. It's worth it.
Okay. Cool.
Next, as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, I was able to demo PlayStation VR. I got to tell you, it blew my mind away. I was not expecting much from it. Walked into the store. I was actually going into Best Buy for something else. I did not realize that they had the demo set up. was going in for something else, saw they had it set up, wanted to try it out. So they had a PlayStation rep there, went over, asked him if I could try it. Nobody was getting on this thing, which was blew my mind away after I tried it. I'm, you know, talking to the guy and he's like, they've got a chair set up so you can sit down. And I'm kind of looking at him like, really, I need to sit down for this. So I sit down, he puts the headset on me, he puts earphones on me, gets me set up with the game I want to play, which was Eve Valkyrie. So that is a kind of dogfight space simulation game.
Now, is it like a full-fledged game?
It's timed. So yeah, the match that I played was I was able to get into the plane, the ship, fly out, and then, I mean, I probably had a good 2 or 3 minutes of dogfighting in the game before the time ran out. So yeah, it's, you know, I tried one full level of the game, which was really neat. So I got to tell you, he puts the headset on me and then he's like, okay, you can look around. And I'm looking around and all I see is like the inside of this hangar and I'm in this ship. So I'm looking down and like, I can see my legs. I can see the controls.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I can see my hands on the controls. I can see like the details of the ships, the buttons. Now the ship isn't terribly detailed because it's like this dogfight ship, but, you're kind of surrounded with glass in the front part. So you can like look out around you and then you start taking off and you're just launched. And, you know, I'm out there, I'm looking around at, because I'm launched into the middle of this huge fleet. So I'm looking around at the fleet. There's a huge planet in front of me with a sun. And, you know, as I tip my ship up to the sun, I get like literal like sun blindness. I can't see what's out in front of me. So I've got to look down and away in order to block the sun from my vision so I can see what's around me. And then it starts up. You know, this fleet, other fleet just comes coming in at warp speed.
So can you see, is Earth or a planet, whatever?
It's just some kind of planet.
But you can
see
the planet.
Oh, yeah, the planet's there, yeah. I mean, it's set up huge in front of you, so you can actually see it. So the enemy fleet comes in, warps in, and you've just got a haul to get over there and save your fleet. And I'm like going at it. I'm in, and I can now see why I needed to sit down, because I'm in the chair, like, moving with the pattern of the ship, like it's actually moving. So much so, I almost feel like I'm in a roller coaster at points because I'm, you know, I'm like going up and down and around.
Do you think this thing's going to make people barf?
I think some people it will. I think people who have some motion sickness are not going to be particularly fond of it, that it will affect them like that. But I'll tell you what, it blew my mind because I've been around for VR. People have been trying to launch VR onto the scene for years. And this is, I was pleased. I was impressed with what they did with this. There were a bunch of different demos that you could do. One was like a soccer heading competition, trying to head soccer balls into the goals. I didn't try that one. The other one was like part of the actual PlayStation VR where you're in this cage and you get lowered in the water and it's just like a shark tour around you. I didn't do that one either. I only did the Eve Valkyrie. But if any of those were like what the Eve Valkyrie was, it would have been pretty neat. It would have been really cool being down in that cage. And now the neat thing is you can see what's going on the television. So as someone who is outside, I could look at the television and see what's going on in 2D and see how they're interacting with things. But the person who's actually there with the goggles is seeing all this stuff in 3D. And you're able to look to your left and see, you know, just in Eve Valkyrie, you're able to see the space. You were able to see part of the Armada. You're able to look up. And you could do all this stuff while you were flying and fighting, too. So, like, if there was a ship passing over me, I could watch it pass, and then I could use the controls and fly around
so
and shoot
it. So, control-wise, let's talk about that. How are the controls? What was that like?
So
intuitive?
For me, the controls were a little bit difficult, and here's why. I do my Y inverted. So, when I go when I want to press the button down, I want the ship to go up. And when I press it up, I want it to go down. I will say, though, when I'm in a first-person shooter game and I'm playing like that, it doesn't work out well for me. It doesn't matter how long I spend doing it. I cannot get used to the controls like that. This, within about... I was probably in the demo about 5 minutes. And within 2 minutes of being in the demo, I was getting a better handle on the controls than I thought I would. So because of the nature of what you're doing in the plane, you know, when somebody's flying over you, you want to look up, you know, instinctually your fingers looking up and going there.
So did you have an opportunity to explode during this, like your plane blow up?
Yeah, it did not, but it took damage. It took damage, so I started seeing
that would be like to have the like death scene, if you will, how disorienting or not is that?
Well, you know, and I'm looking at some of the list of things that are coming out, and again, if they do this right, I do believe this could be the next big wave of gaming, and I hope they do it right because I am excited for what I saw. But I'm looking, you know, at kind of their lineup. They have Battle Zones, which is almost like a Tron tank universe type thing.
Oh, okay, cool.
And that was actually...
How detailed are the graphics? Like, when you get out into space, are we talking about kind of chunky-looking ships, or are we talking about detailed?
No, we're talking about... We're talking pretty I would say the ship that you're in is very detailed. So the ship that you're in looking around, you can see buttons and, like, almost like you want to push them and see what they do. The ships that you're fighting, they have some detail to them, but not a ton. And remember, everything's whizzing by you. This isn't like you're sitting there watching everything from a distance. Like, you're in the battle, you know, getting away from ships that are actually chasing you. Like I said, I took damage, so, you know, screen was starting to crack in the damage that I took. My glass in my ship was starting to crack a little from some of the damage that I took. And, you know, so, like, I'm not thinking about, you know, oh, how great does that look? I'm thinking, ah, crap, I need to get away. But as you're flying out into the Armada just looks huge and vast.
Cool.
The experience that you're getting here, the graphics are great. It is something that is, it's worth considering, it's worth looking at, but you are getting this for the total experience. Like, the expanse of space is what you were getting in this particular game.
That sounds really cool. I feel now I need to, like, sneak into the Best Buy. Go find a reason to go to Best Buy.
Right.
I feel like all my reasons have dried up. Maybe I can look for some podcasting equipment or something.
There you go.
And roll up there and try the VR thing. And I stand by what I said when we did our E3 episode, which is that I'm waiting. I think the game that will prove this system is when someone does the horror game.
Well, and Resident Evil 7 is on the list. Yep, Resident Evil 7 is on the list for releases, as well as Batman Arkham VR. Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront, I'm looking forward particularly to see what they do with that one. Because if...
Yeah, hopefully those of them stands alone. They don't make it, too much of what we've seen before.
Yep.
That's so cool. I'm actually a little bit excited about that. It sounds like it could be really, really neat.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised, and it's one of those things where, as much as I can sit here and talk about it, going and actually experiencing it is a completely different feel. So, yeah, if you get a chance, check out Best Buy. I think you can actually go to PlayStation VR, and they have a list of Best Buys that have demos near you.
Awesome. So which, were you one near here?
Yep, I was the one right in White Marsh, right down the road here. So, yep. All right. So, there are my two big reviews for the week. Nathan, movie reviews.
Yeah, so, you know, it's been a little bit of time since we've gotten together. So, there, in the meantime, there have been... movies out that have kind of come and gone. Yeah. Well, not gone, but I don't think we got much of a chance to. We did our Star Trek episode, but we didn't really talk too much about Star Trek. I think you've seen it at this point.
I did, yep.
And not too much to say. I enjoyed it. I think in some ways it was the most fun and lighthearted of the three movies. I think it was the one that reminded me most of Star Trek, the original series.
Yep.
So in some ways, it was probably my favorite. I still think they're missing out a little bit on being able to tell a really good story. They keep kind of diverting back to that action template. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it, I think, the most in some ways of any of the movies in the series. But still, we're making action movies with a side story. We're not making story-driven work, I don't think. I saw Bourne.
Yep.
The Bourne...
Jason Bourne.
Yeah, Jason Bourne. There you go.
Yeah.
I was pretty... I don't know if Bourne stiff is the right word, but I was quite bored by the movie. The last 20 minutes or so finally got some kind of pulse-pounding action.
Mm-hmm.
I think you made a good statement. It's sort of like anyone who kind of wants something from Bourne I think anybody who wants what they previously had with the last three Bourne movies is going to get pretty much the same thing.
Right.
I just feel like they went one movie too far. The first three formed like a cohesive storyline, and I felt like Bourne was always moving forward trying to achieve something and realize something. And there was a sort of like realization that happened at the end of the last movie, of the Bourne Ultimatum, that wrapped things up. Yes, Bourne is back. Yes, he learns like an inch or two more of information he didn't have. But it really, it just feels like it's kind of tacked on, a new excuse for him to run from people, to have a bunch of government agents staring at boards and screaming, "Get Bourne!" and watching all the lights on their little guys go out as Bourne enters the room. And it just didn't seem to be a lot of reason to be. So I was a little bit bummed out by that one, because it just, it kind of felt like there's not a lot of juice left in the franchise. Mm.
I think that's fair enough. I'll go back to Star Trek. I did see that one as well. I enjoyed it. I thought they did a good job with it. You know, Idris Elba is a fantastic actor. I think he does a good job in this.
He survived the makeup
problem
a little bit, though his character could have been a lot stronger. They did a weird thing where they kind of keep his identity secret for a very long time, and I don't think that was really the right choice. Yeah. And then what was super strange is like 2 days after I saw the movie, they had a trailer on TV, and you know, Uhura says something like, "It's him right there," and they like give away his they reveal who he is, and it's sort of like, well, then what really was the point of keeping his identity? Yeah. I mean, because it's not like Khan; he doesn't turn out to be somebody you know of.
Yeah,
but in the context of the story, there is a backstory to Elba's character. And I feel like I almost feel like the last half of this movie should have almost been the first half, and there have been more things that happened. But it's a fun action movie. I thought it captured the tone well.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I love the interaction between Kirk and Bones and Spock. They all do a fantastic job bringing that. Bringing the old interaction into the new characters.
And it's certainly bittersweet, but like and this, of course, had happened before Anton Yelchin's death, but they did an actually nice job of starting to bring Chekhov into the story a little bit, and some of his interaction with Kirk was nice, and that clearly had been already done in the movie. And so there's a sense of the whole crew sort of operating together that I like. It isn't just the Kirk and Spock show this time through.
Yeah.
It's not just any one thing. Simon Pegg has a hand in the script, so it's not surprising Scotty gets a lot more lines and a lot more screen time. But I didn't mind that. I enjoyed that he did. And I think it worked just fine. Again, if anything, it really had me coming out of there wanting to watch more of the original series. Which is nice. I think that tone is not a tone that gets copied a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And then as far as Bourne, you know, I liked it. But again, like you said, we had talked about, you know, if you're looking for something new and different, this isn't it. If you're looking for the Bourne formula, this is what you're getting. It's Matt Damon playing Jason Bourne, running from people, outsmarting them, beating them up, taking them down. Now, there were two things that you had mentioned earlier, you know, that you felt Bourne almost had gotten too stoic.
He has like about four lines of dialogue in this movie. He had a decent amount of interaction and a real purpose in the first Bourne movie.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, he did fall into more of the typical spy character where he meets the girl and interacts with her. But there was a human being in there. Mm-hmm. And there almost doesn't even seem to be anymore. Like, he is, but Matt Damon is mostly wasted playing this character. I mean, he's got the physicality and everything. But as a But they have reduced Bourne so much, and I believe it's for the purpose of, okay, they're almost acting like we want to start another Bourne series. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, this is going to be sort of a new series. But there just isn't enough complexity or interest, I think, by the end of this movie to me that, like, well, where is he going to go next? He's just sort of out there again. Like, there isn't a storyline humming through this the way they were through the first three movies.
Well, and what I think you've got going on, particularly at the end of this one, is, you know, Bourne has a brilliant moment throughout each movie where you know he is one step ahead of everything that's going on. This one comes at the end of the movie, and to me, while it almost felt like they were trying to set it up to go to another one, they've almost eliminated that possibility because of the things that he knows that are going on. Like,
well,
he
and he's
never...
always going to be... At this point, he is... He might as well be RoboCop. In fact, RoboCop has more human flaws than Bourne. I mean, realistically, Bourne is like the Terminator at this point. He is... I mean, surprise, surprise, Bourne doesn't die at the end of the movie. But, I mean... There's so much going on that is just solved by Bourne walks into the room and takes out 20 guys, you know? Or Bourne is going to do this crazy thing that no one should ever survive from. And the collateral damage in this movie is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about, like, the fact that he even puts himself out there is putting other people in danger.
Right.
And to me, it just... I guess one question. I understand the idea that if these are the things you like, this is why you like Bourne. But if they had bothered to really, like, delve into a new storyline, if they had bothered to... If they had moved away from the shadowy government, grumpy old white man looking at the screen... And we've had how many grumpy old white men? Now we've been through...
Four, right?
Yeah, we've had Chris Cooper. We've had... we had grumpy white woman, Joan Allen. We had David Strathairn. We had Brian Cox, Albert Finney, who sometimes think Brian Cox and Albert Finney are the same person. And they're like, let's cast them both.
Right.
And... Now Tommy Lee Jones, who's... Tommy Lee Jones, the bags under his eyes had bags.
Yeah.
Like, and those bags had bags. His face looked like the surface of the moon in this movie. It was amazing. But if they had done something different, would you have been disappointed? Or you would have probably gone along for the ride? I think you probably... I mean, if they had done something worthwhile, had they given you a story and characters to care about, and they had given Bourne a little bit more vulnerability...
Yeah,
I think he still would have enjoyed it.
It's possible. See, here's my thing, though. I look at Bourne at this point as a superhero, and I'm sick and tired of my superheroes not being the powerhouses that they should be. And to me, Bourne is... that's how I view him at this point. He's a superhero. He's the powerhouse. He's going in. He's doing it. And I want to see a movie like that occasionally because I don't feel like I get that with other movies. I don't feel like there are enough movies that portray the hero as just, hey, he's the hero. He's coming in, he's doing his thing, and he's leaving. And to me, that's part of what I enjoyed about this was, you know, yeah. Is it realistic that Bourne can go in and, you know, take care of 20 guys? Is it realistic that he can fall off a two-story building or a four-story building or a five-story building and survive? No, but you know what? I'm willing to dismiss it because I feel like I don't see any movies like that.
Yeah, well, there's actually quite a few movies like that. I mean, I feel like, first off, a lot of the Marvel movies are going that way. I think where it's primarily the heroes are getting so powerful that they can't be stopped. I understand what you mean. Sometimes they go the other direction and it's overdone. I think the problem with Bourne is, at least this newest Bourne, the original series of Bourne movies kept enough of him being in the dark about things that he was still the main character, that he still had some agency that you want to see explored. Meaning, yes, he was this powerhouse that could beat people down, and he did it through all three movies, but his weakness, his vulnerability, was not one of fisticuffs or being able to drive a car off a building. He survived those things. It was his internal person was damaged and broken, and he didn't even know what was wrong with it exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But with Ultimatum, he ultimately squares that away to some degree.
Right.
So the new movie would almost really need to bring Bourne more in, almost like the man with no name in like a Western, where he's a major focal point, but maybe not the major character. You know, the way that like Rambo eventually just started like coming into other people's stories.
Sure.
And I think that might have been the way to go. The problem with the Bourne movies and the strength of the Bourne movies is Bourne is essentially the person that Bourne is trying to save at the end of the day.
Right.
The person he's trying to rescue is this guy that got sidelined by all these terrible things. It's just now we're getting to a point where what is really left for him to do, what's really left in his story. Yeah. And I think if Bourne were more of a side character, if he were more of the guy who comes in to the town, to the place, whatever, and has to intersect with someone else's story, I just think his story isn't as interesting anymore because they're telling us in small cubic chunks.
Right. And I can appreciate that. I think you might be right. If he, you know, if from here on out, you know, he's whole, so to speak, and then
what's he going to do with that wholeness? Yeah. Is like essentially, but they keep finding a way to make him broken,
right?
So they can have him repeat the same set of actions.
Right. Yeah,
and I have no problem with him fighting the entire continent of Russia as long as there's somebody interesting along with him to do so.
Sure, yeah. And I could see that. I can appreciate that. But you saw two more recent movies.
I did. So a few weeks ago, I saw the new Peach Dragon.
Yep.
Disney movie. You and I have kind of we probably look like Disney cheerleaders, even though I don't think that is, we don't look like cheerleaders at all, trust me.
Right.
But in the terms of, you know, we've been kind of talking a lot about their movies and being excited about, like, the Jungle Book that came out. I didn't like Alice Through the Looking Glass at all, but that one really feels like an outlier to what some of Disney's been doing live action wise, particularly when they kind of tried to restart all of this, and Cinderella last year, and now we have The Jungle Book, which was a fit. Both of those were very good movies.
Yes.
You could call them very good movies without trying to identify them as children's movies.
Yes.
The same was true of the BFG. The BFG leaned more towards a story book children's fairy tale feel, but I still feel it qualifies as a movie that is good for all ages, if you will. And Peach Dragon is in that same vein. It's based off the 1970-something movie with Mickey Rooney and a kind of a big, goofy-looking green dragon. And this movie doesn't really play that way at all. It has a lot more in common with a movie like The Black Stallion. I recently sat down and watched The Black Stallion with my kids. They had the Criterion version came out. We watched it. It's amazing how good that movie is and how rapt their attention was, considering that there's almost no dialogue for about 30 minutes. Peach Dragon, surprisingly, has that sort of feel, almost an art house feel. You almost are surprised by it because the atmosphere of the movie, the dragon itself, the way it's presented, it's almost there right from the beginning of the story. The relationship between the boy and the dragon is established almost immediately, in some ways similar to Black Stallion, where there's very little dialogue. I took both of my kids to see, and they were very much into the story. It conveyed a lot of storytelling without the usual beats, without having to have the generic character development. There are characters in here that are 100% sort of generic. Oh, I know where this is. There's the old man. Robert Redford's the kind of crazy old man that believes in dragons. Carl Urban is the kind of, like, lout guy who's going to hunt the dragon.
Right.
But in that, there are varying degrees of who they are. Carl Urban's character is not really a bad guy.
Sure.
He's just a guy who's like, there's a dragon in the woods, and I live in a podunk nothing town.
Right.
I'm going to be awesome if I can catch the dragon. So they don't allow these characters to become stock types. It's not really about the characters. It's about the overall experience and the dragon and the cinematography. Disney took a chance by hiring a guy who really had only done two small art movies here. And that feeling of open-endedness, that feeling of everything's not sketched out, not everything is happening the way you would expect it to happen, is refreshing in a big-budget movie. You would never expect a movie with a fire-breathing dragon to have this level of intimacy and nuance.
Sure.
So I think it's a great movie. I'm a little disappointed that it's not doing better. I think it's doing okay. But if you're looking to take your kids to a movie, this is an excellent movie. But as it turns out, it's not even the only really good children's movie out there.
Sure.
I also recently saw Kubo and the Two Strings by Leica Studios, who have a habit of releasing really great animated movies that very few people go to see. But they always catch up with them on DVD and, like, Netflix and things like that, which must explain why Leica has now been able to make four or five movies. I mean, they've done Coraline, they've done Paranorman, they've done The Box Trolls.
Yep.
And as far as I know, maybe Coraline, but I don't think any of them have been really big box office hits. And now Kubo is following in that sort of frame. But Kubo draws from Japanese folklore, Japanese mythology, and also from anime to an extent. So if any of that appeals to you, Leica does stop motion animation. They do stop motion animation so well that it's starting to look like CGI, really good CGI. But I mean, it's so detailed, it's almost so flawless that I almost wish there were a few more jerks and ticks to it, because you're almost looking and being like, well, they could have accomplished that through CGI, but the artistry is amazing, and the storytelling is very good. There are a lot of voice actors you'll recognize in this. It's a little scary for kids, but I mean, again, I took my 2 and 4 year old, and they were good.
Yeah.
There's some creepy witch characters. Kubo starts the movie as a small baby, and he's already had one eye removed. So there are some stakes to the story,
right,
and they're looking to get the other eye.
Right.
So, but the overall tone is a nice balance. There's a lot of really beauty to it. We've talked many times about, is it worth seeing a movie in 3D? This one it is, and the 3D is really not all that immersive. It's just that there's a real element of the story that involves origami,
sure,
paper folding, and some of these paper folded images kind of pull up and come out of the screen. So it adds a depth that is very subtle, but I think it adds a depth that almost adds some atmosphere and some lyricism to the movie. And they have a really cool cover that Regina Spektor does of While My Guitar Gently Weeps over the credits. And the credits show Leica doing their thing where they make the stop motion
right
character. So
okay,
both of these movies are as good as anything we've gotten the whole summer. They're two of the very best movies of the summer. I don't care if you're 10 years old or 70 years old.
Yeah.
They're really good, and I recommend both of them highly. So,
awesome. All right, so you got a couple of movies that you know, worth seeing. Summer's not quite over yet, so go ahead and take some time. Go out and see one of these
movies.
It's
probably just about over as far as big movies
are concerned. Yeah, that's true.
So Ben-Hur was a huge flop over the weekend. And
have you seen that one yet?
I haven't. Okay. And you know, I just started reading reviews where they were saying, oh, there's more Jesus in this movie than the previous ones. And I was thinking, the trailers don't make it look like that.
I know.
I started to wonder if they had somehow found a way to remove Christ from Ben-Hur, A Tale of the Christ.
Right.
But apparently that's not the case. I'm not sold on it. I mean, I've really recently been wanting to sit back down and just watch the original Ben-Hur, so
sure.
I don't know. I'm sure maybe I'll check it out at some point, but not while it's in theaters.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking. Maybe I'll go check it out at the $4 theater or, you know, Redbox it. But
yeah, so
you know,
we're moving into the adult sphere of movie releases, so hopefully we'll get some chances to check some out.
Yeah. I think for me, you know, Joy and I were talking, the next, we managed to hit our summer watch list, the movie we really wanted to see. We were able to hit him and see him. The next one we're looking forward to, Doctor Strange. So
Doctor Strange coming out
in November.
So before then, we're going to have to catch up with the Doctor Strange TV movie from the 70s.
That's right.
And the Full Moon Dr. Mordred
that
was released in the
90s.
That's
right.
So.
And then the cartoon that came out back in like 2009.
Oh, that's too legit for me. Yeah, that sounds like a good time. All right.
We're going to go ahead and sign off now. We'll catch you all later.
Take care.
Really shook the pillars of heaven, didn't we, Wayne?